Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is quite a big room for a small briefing, I was going to say. So if you want to move closer, I think that would be beneficial for the discussion, but I'll leave that up to you. The Mission of Sweden is very pleased to welcome you all to this briefing, which is co-organized with the WHO office here at the United Nations in New York. And the topic at hand is the WHO Financing Dialogue, Best Practices and Lessons Learned. And for this purpose, we have the honor of having Dr. Jacob Komaresan, who is the Executive Director of the WHO office here in New York, to brief us informally about the experience of this very interesting initiative that's been going on in Geneva for some time. We're very grateful for you to take time to be with us here today. I'd also like to thank the funds and programs for lending us this room during the joint meetings of the board. Given today's topic, WHO Financing Dialogue, Best Practices and Lessons Learned, I would like to begin by reading out, as I have on many occasions, and as you know, that Sweden is quite active on this issue of structured dialogues, the paragraph 46 of the QCPR resolution adopted a year ago, which requested the executive boards of the funds and programs and the governing bodies of the specialized agencies, as appropriate, to organize structured dialogues during the year 2014 on how to finance development results agreed in the new strategic planning cycle of their respective entities, with a view to making non-core resources more predictable and less restricted, earmarked, and broadening the donor base, and improving the adequacy and predictability of resource flows. Now, this paragraph mandates the executive boards to organize structured dialogues on how to finance the implementation of the strategic plans and the results frameworks. Moreover, there's a special emphasis put on making non-core more predictable and less restrictive, more aligned with the strategic plans and country programs. These structured dialogues are to take place during 2014. We have already started discussions at the executive board level last week in the UNDP, UNFPA, UNOPS executive board. And this week we have the UNICEF executive board. So we are putting this, giving this issue attention at the executive board level with a view of organizing discussions later on this year. But without further ado, I would like now to hand over to Dr. Jacob Komaresan to give us the briefing, and after that we will have an interactive discussion with Q&A and questions so that we can further deepen our understanding of this important initiative. Dr. Komaresan, you have the floor.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you this afternoon and to share with you some of WHO's experiences as we embarked on this financing dialogue. I also want to say that we need some strong champions from the member states in order for an initiative of this nature to go forward. And in that sense, we are very pleased that Sweden was one of us to take the leadership role in pursuing this aspect of our reform in the past few years. What I'd like to do this afternoon is to give you an idea of the context in which this financing dialogue took place, some of the principles which we had in mind, the outcomes to date, and the lessons learned so far. And I'd also like to introduce to you a new tool which we have been using, which was launched about 6 months ago, called the Program Budget Web Portal. And my colleague Fatima will go through some of the slides relating to that. Just to give you an update on the context, the financing dialogue is one of the key elements of a major reform which we have been undertaking in the past 4 years. This reform started in 2010, January, with a meeting which was called during the executive board session of WHO for the future financing of the organization. And at that time, one of the key messages from our member states was that there needs to be more clarity on the role of WHO, which would be a precursor in the discussions towards financing. And this brought us a step forward in the dialogue, and we started focusing on our program aspects, some of the managerial aspects of our organization and governance of the organization. So if you go back a few years, 15 years ago, the biennial budget for WHO was $1.65 billion. But over the years, it has grown to almost $4 billion. And you can imagine that the agenda of WHO has evolved consequently. Now, the interesting part of this was that 75% of the funding came from voluntary contributions, and only 25% were assessed contributions or co-contributions. This meant that we had to focus more on the quality of the financing rather than the quantity, because the voluntary contributions were not predictable and it was project-based and not for the co-program budget. And our voluntary contributions were also heavily earmarked, which meant that it lacked predictability for the next biennium and so on. And therefore, we needed flexibility in the financing of the organization in order to fund our entire program budget. So consequently, you'll find that there was a misalignment between WHO's program budget and how the funds were being earmarked. So the aim of the financing dialogue was to ensure that there was a match between WHO's program, its results and its deliverables, and the resources we had in order to finance them. The aim of this exercise was ultimately to improve the effectiveness of the organization and the quality of work of the organization. So, as an organization, our DG wanted to be accountable for our resources, not only, but also the results and the programs which we would be undertaking. So, our first step was to agree on the program priorities and the core functions of the organization. And this took a period of time, but this was approved in 2012 by the World Health Assembly, and we had our program priorities under five major headings. One was communicable diseases, the second was non-communicable diseases, the third was promoting health through a life course, the fourth was health system strengthening, and the fifth was surveillance, preparedness, and response. And all this had to be underlined with some corporate services, which was at our DG office level. So the financing actually took place in three phases once the program priorities were approved. Once these program priorities were approved, our budget was then aligned to these program priorities. And last May, the World Health Assembly approved the entire budget in totality, and this is the close to $4 billion which was approved. And this was the first time in the history of the organization that a budget was approved in entirety. Usually only the co-budget or the assessed contributions were approved by the World Health Assembly. So this was a major step for us. And following that, we have started this financing dialogue, which included not only the bilaterals, all the member states were invited, as well as the non-state contributors of more than $1 million. So we had two major dialogues. The first one was in June, and the second one was in November. And in between, the dialogue also took place in our six regional committees. The third step is now to continue to do the dialogue in order to raise the shortfall, and I'll come to this very quickly. So we'll do coordinated and targeted organization-wide resource mobilization in order to fund the remaining portions of the program budget. So the principles were firstly to align our program budget with the resources, as I mentioned earlier. The second one is to improve the predictability of financing. Our past baseline was 50% was available before the beginning of the biennium, and our target was to reach 70% for this biennium. The third was to get more flexible financing. In other words, programs which were not easily funded should be funded. The fourth one was to reduce the vulnerability, and I want to mention here that 80% of our voluntary contributions came from 20 contributors. And this, again, restricts our flexibility in a big way. And the last one was to increase the transparency of the funding. Many member states were asking for us who the non-state actors were and where these voluntary contributions were coming from. So the outcomes to date, the predictability of the financing has increased a lot. By the end of last year, 70% of our program budget was funded, and this was our target. In addition to that, in the November meeting, the funding projections were brought to 85% after several of our member states pledged resources beyond the 70%. The second outcome was that there's a better aligning between the program budget and the deliverables and the financing. So WHO will no longer accept funding which is outside of the program budget. And this is a major shift for us. And this has not happened in the past year. So this will be the first biennium where we'll be abiding by this principle. The third one was to increase the transparency of financing. And you will see in our web portal how transparent it is. You can see by each program where the financing is coming from, whether it's assessed contributions or voluntary contributions, and who is financing them. We also reduced the vulnerability of financing. Several of our member states, including the BRICS, are willing to look at areas which are not normally funded. In other words, they're flexible in their funding, or maybe not all, but at least some portions of their budget will be spent on program funding rather than projectized funding. So what are our next steps? Although we have quite a strong financial picture to start the biennium, there are still some shortfalls in particular programs. And this is where we need to do further alignment and raise funds from our member states and our other donors. And the second step is to bring these shortfalls through a coordinated resource mobilization strategy. And finally, in order for this to be successful, we need to have a discipline and behavior change, not only from us, the Secretariat, but also the member states and the contributors, so that those programs which are seriously underfunded will be resourced in the future. So some of the lessons we have learned so far is that this financing dialogue is not only changing the way in financing, it's also changing the way in which we are operating as an organization. It's making us more effective because we are not only discussing it in the headquarters in Geneva, but also the 6 regional offices and country offices. The financing dialogue, I must say, is a journey which we have started. It started about 8 months ago. It's not a one-step process, and it's going to continue, and we'll be learning many lessons along the way. But one of the key lessons is that we need member state ownership of the entire process for it to be successful. And the third major lesson is that transparency underpins this whole dialogue. And in order to gain the trust from our member states, but also the other contributors, we need to be completely transparent in our financing and where the money is going and how the results will be delivered. And one of the key tools which we have introduced is this web portal, and my colleague Fatima will go through it quickly in the next few minutes.
Great. Sorry about that. I'm not too familiar with this laptop. So as Jacob had mentioned, the web portal is has been 6 months in coming and is really a result of a request from our member states to show transparency and tangible effects of the WHO reform effort. This portal actually goes beyond just putting the global program of work and our program budget online, because it goes into more details of our programs and projects, which include baselines and indicators. And it brings together the results we want to achieve, how we'll do it, the resources we have, and as well as funding information. This portal is a work in progress, and it's going to be updated continuously. The next one is planned in March, and we will also have regular performance reviews as well as annual performance report. So I will quickly take you through the portal so you can get an idea of how it works, and it can be easily accessed through the WHO website. I'll start in the program section. And as you can see, all of the five categories that Jacob mentioned are down here, as well as the specific projects or programs. So I'm going to just look at the reproductive health, or reproductive maternal newborn child health. You can see the overview is taken directly from our program budget, so it gives you an outline of what this program entails. And the next part looks at what we want to achieve in this program, including indicators, baselines, and targets. You can click on the indicators to get a better idea of this, so we'll just look at one quickly. So you can get, you can get an idea of the baseline, source of the baseline, data collection tools, frequency of data collection, and as well as the contact person in WHO for this area. And you can see this for all of the indicators we have, you can look at. And as we continue to scroll down, you can see four outputs linked to this area of work. And it lays out deliverables at each level of the organization, so at the country office, the regional, and the headquarters level. And again, as for the above, we can link, click on the link to the deliverables to get some information about what we expect to come out of it, as well as you can see which countries we have operations in each area. And then as we continue to go down, we go into resources for each output. And this is also broken down into country, regional, headquarter level. You can also look at it, all of the offices together, or you can focus, for instance, on the Americas or any of the other regions, and then it'll just show you only for that section. So there's quite a nice breakdown here. Let me go back. And then as we keep on going down, it looks at how we're financed for this area. So all of the donors that have contributed, you can see the total funding and the for each. So it's quite a lot here. And so that's this is something we have for each program area. And the next section I want to take you through is the financing section. And this section basically shows the overall funding available for 2014 and 2015. So as you can see, as Jacob mentioned, we're set at 70% now. And you can also click on projections. So that shows the projected funding that we expect coming in against the approved budget. So there is a little bit more in that regard. If you scroll further down, we can see distribution of funds available for each of the categories. Here I think we can also play around with, you can just focus on each category and look at the different programs. And then finally, we can also look at sources of funding. So in this pie chart, there's a breakdown of the assessed, voluntary, and projected funding for all contributors, and if you want, you can look at specific groups. So we can just look at the African Development Bank, for instance, and of course, we're only looking at their, of course, they only do voluntary contribution. And then you click further down and you can see where the funders have put in their contributions. So in this case, they've focused on health systems and preparedness. So you can see where what the totals are there. And then if we go back to, all contributors, you can see a breakdown throughout in all five categories where the funding is coming in and where there's still gaps. So, yeah, that's the portal in a nutshell. And if you have any questions, we're happy to answer them. Thanks.
Yeah, as you can see, this is a very transparent tool. And you can go through any program and see who's funding it and where the funds are going. And also the deliverables, the results which we'll achieve for that funding. So in summary, I want to give three key messages. The first is that it's an integrated budget. We don't have any more the assessed contributions and voluntary contributions. Our board has and the assembly has approved it in totality. So the entire program budget is approved. The second part is that now there is an alignment between the program priorities as well as the budget, so that it's clear that where there are the shortfalls and we can raise money for that through a coordinated resource mobilization. And it's the responsibility of not only the secretariat but also the member states and other non-state actors to ensure that that element of the program is funded. The last aspect is that we've involved all the member states in this exercise, and they've contributed to this completely throughout the entire process. And as I mentioned to you, this is part of the whole organizational reform. So all the member states have been involved, and it's not just a set of donors who have been involved. It's been the donors as well as the recipient countries who have been involved. And you can see, if you go further into the details, some of the small contributions from our member states, you can see exactly where the money is going to. Thank you.
Thank you very much, WHO Booth, Jacob, and sorry, your name?
Fatima,
of course, for this very interesting presentation. I think it's a really exciting experiment that that is going on. Needless to say, we think it's a wonderful tool that WHO is now setting up, not least with this web portal, but more importantly, the effect that it has on deliberations at the level of your governing board in terms of increasing collective responsibility, and this is being achieved very much thanks to the greater transparency that that you now have in terms of the funding. And how it links and aligns to your strategic priorities and the work program. This is exactly the objective that that we see for the structured dialogues of the funds and programs. I would like to open up the floor at this point for questions and comments from. On the presentations that we have just heard, and I also see representatives from the funds and programs in the room. It would be particularly interesting also to hear some of your perspectives on the implementation of this new approach and the web portal. But the floor is open, and I see Australia, New Zealand, and Switzerland in that order. Then we continue. Chris, you have the floor.
Thank you very much, Magnus, and thank you very much to Sweden and to the WHO for organising this, which I think is a really interesting session, and also congratulations to the WHO for all the work that you've done. I think it's really a very positive step forward and something that we will look at very closely and will be very useful for us in our discussions here in New York. Just one question at the moment from me was, in the discussions that you've had in Geneva, has there been much of a look into not just I guess, working out, bringing together the voluntary contributions and the assessed contributions, but really looking at when you do receive voluntary contributions, that those contributions can be, I suppose, wholly earmarked or very soft, sorry, wholly unearmarked or very softly earmarked to particular themes or outcomes in the plan. And what sort of, how has that discussion gone to really improve the quality of those voluntary contributions? And I suppose, what is the next steps in that process from here on? Thank you very much.
Great. So let's take a couple more. New Zealand.
Thank you. I'm not sure my question is different enough to repeat it, but I'm going to anyway. But first I want to say congratulations to WHO for meeting our needs of greater integration together with greater simplification. So I think you've done a good job on that. And it's just in the along the lines that Australia asked in the QCPR discussions we had. We began with the problem of the imbalance between core and non-core, and then it quickly developed into the being able to separate the different types of non-core and what the incentives to find out what the incentives were in order to have a wider donor base and greater predictability. So I think it might be the same question, but it's just whether, first of all, those questions are exercising your minds at the moment, the same as it was for those of us involved with QCPR, and also if you have the tools within this portal and what sits behind it to be able to find that out. First of all, what the facts are, and also how you might be able to have used that information to increase the predictability that you have.
Switzerland.
Thank you very much, and thank you to the Mission of Sweden and to WHO for organizing this meeting. I think that's very helpful, and it's a good start for our discussions to be had in the executive boards. I have three questions. I'm not familiar with the exact portfolio of WHO, but my question is, have you noticed a difference in approaching or in the funding for normative aspects of your work? And how did you deal with that tendency to fund rather project or operational elements as opposed to normative work, which is, I assume, also an important element in your discussion on the future role of WHO, as it is a question for the future of the UN system overall. The second question is on the regional dialogues. If you could tell us a bit more in how far the regional dialogues differed and what approaches you used there. Was it mainly to, let's say, incentivize funding for a region from a region, or was it also to make your program a little bit better known? And my third question is the fundraising, or let's say some organizations do their fundraising at different levels. Some do more fundraising at the global level, and for others it's the country level fundraising that is most important. My assumption is that for WHO you are probably somewhere further up and not necessarily active in your country representations for the fundraising. And I would like to ask if that assumption is correct and if that was a help in your in the design of your system. Thank you.
Thank you. I give the floor to Jacob.
All right. Voluntary contributions currently has, as I mentioned, 80% of the funding coming from 20 donors only. And 51% of that is from governments, and 49% is from non-state actors. So this is quite difficult if you want to manage this and if it continues in that way. And so one of the key things which happened for us was the approval of the entire budget, which is aligned to the program. So in future, we will not accept any project funding. We will only accept funding for the program in entirety. And this should change the dynamics of what happens in the future. So we will not get one project like polio, for instance, heavily funded, whereas some of our core issues, like you said, are not funded. This has changed the dynamics quite a lot. And in order to address the second question, we are now able to go back to the donors to see where the shortfall is, where the 15% of the funding shortfall is. And most of it is some of the programs which are currently underfunded. And we will try to raise funds for that and not for the remaining portions of the funding which is already secured. So this allows us to have a dialogue with the member states and with the non-state actors on where our needs are and how the future financing should happen. We are hoping that most of our normative aspects can be covered based on this type of a dialogue which we will have with the member states. The question on the regional dialogues, this has been done. Our Director General is calling this a transitional budget because it has been done quite quickly as part of the reform process. So the idea of the regional dialogue was to ensure that people are aware about this, and for the next year, we will start with the country priorities so that we can have a bottom-up planning process. So for the biennium 16 and 17, we will have the country priorities, which will then feed into the regional priorities, and then we will have the headquarters priorities aligned to this. However, we could not do that for this biennium, meaning the 14-15. And therefore, our regional dialogues will be very important for the next biennium, where our country priorities will be determined, and that will allow us to have the financing taking place according to the bottom-up planning process. Is there anything else which we need to cover? Yeah, the question about the fundraising at the different levels of the organization, you're right. Mostly it has been at a higher level fundraising for now. But hopefully as we start the country dialogues in the future, we can see whether local fundraising can also be part of this financing dialogue. Thank you.
And next on the list is Norway.
Thank you very much, and I would also like to join previous speakers in thanking for organizing this informal and WHO for the very interesting presentation on their budget reform and the structured dialogue which has been included in that process. I guess we who are in the executive boards of the New York-based organizations have got quite much inspiration for how we can take the structured dialogue with the funds and programs further. Although there seems to be quite many similarities between the approved integrated budgets of the funds and programs and the new WHO budget. But I guess this discussion on how to enhance the quality and predictability of earmarked resources is very important and also something we would need to bring forward in the executive boards of the funds and programs. I think this last information provided by WHO that the organization will not accept project funding anymore is very interesting. I guess that is an issue where other UN organizations have a lot to learn. But going ahead I have one question. regarding this this portal, and that is whether, I mean, at which level the budgeting is done. Is it an output level the budgeting is done, and where you will assess the funding gaps? That was a concrete question. And then when we are going to continue our discussions on the funding of the New York-based organizations, we also have to look into the amount of core resources. So I guess in the future we need a discussion on both future core funding and of the predictability and quality of earmarked funding. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Next on the list is UK, I think. Yes.
Thank you very much. And let me add my thanks to Sweden and to WHO for this very useful dialogue. I think speakers before me have asked and responded to a number of really important questions, and it's very useful to get a better understanding of the potential similarities and differences between WHO and the New York-based funds and programs. I can also see some areas where there is definite overlap and we can do a lot of learning. And I was also really interested to hear what you said about no longer accepting project proposals and taking a much more holistic look at the budget, which would be an enormous change for the funds and programs here. And I think I would definitely be keen to learn more about how that worked. I think it would be very challenging for some of the New York-based funds and programs because actually a lot of fundraising is done at country level. I do have one question, which is rather a technical one. I thought... obviously, transparency is a really key part of this, and that's something that the UK is very keen on. And I thought your website looked really, really interesting and useful, and which made me wonder, did you have a lot of the data to populate that website already? Because it seems to be a lot of very good quality, very detailed information. So to what extent did you have that already, and to what extent did this process actually drive better data for WHO to understand where the funding shortfalls were and which things were being overfunded and underfunded? Thank you.
Thank you. Please.
All right. Quickly to answer your question, there are two major pieces of information which went into the web portal. First is our global program of work, which is a 6-year program of work for the next 3 bienniums. That was one major piece of work which was already done. The second piece of work was our program budget for 14 and 15. So these were the two major pieces of work which was done, which led to the portal. As the financing dialogue happens, the others were inputted. We had 70% of the funding, and then based on our November meeting, we had another 15% of the shortfall raised. So these are new information which is being added on to the portal. I believe we had a question about whether it's at the input level or at the output level. We have both. So we have the inputs from various member states and our non-state actors, but we are also tracking it to our deliverables. So in the future, we will be providing reports which will say exactly what the results are and deliverables based on the financing. So it's both at the input level and at the output level. The last point I'd like to make is that yes, we are not accepting any more project-based funding, but we are having a dialogue. And with the BRICS countries, there was a meeting in Cape Town where they talked about WHO financing. And many of the BRICS countries are now looking at least partially, the resources coming into program funding rather than in projects. So slowly, the member states are also seeing the value of this exercise and aligning their resource inputs according to our program needs and priorities. So as I mentioned to you, one of the key things which will happen is that there needs to be a discipline between the Secretariat, the member states, and the non-state actors. Otherwise, this will not work well.
Thank you for that. Anybody else who would? Yes, gentleman up there. Maybe you could start by identifying yourself.
That's right. I'm Stéphane Bussard from Le Temps newspaper, Swiss daily newspaper in Geneva. I have a little question about what you mentioned about the financing dialogue, in the sense I remember in 2010, in the midst of the H1N1 pandemic, there was a lot of questions about possible conflict of interest in the public-private partnership and things like that. And I was wondering if you managed to put in place the safeguards that were asked for at the time in terms of preventing conflict of interest. And my second question is about project financing. Are you afraid, actually, of losing, for example, possible donors such as Bill Gates Foundation or things like that, since it's no longer possible to have a project-based financing? Thank you.
Interesting question. Would you like to take that on?
Well, our hope is that we will not lose any of our funders, but we'll increase the pool of our funders through this exercise. That's our aim. It remains to be seen whether that's going to happen or not. But in our last November meeting, I want to say that several non-state actors as well did the funding, including Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. So they're still with us. And in fact, I think some of new donors also came in during that November meeting. Yes, we have all the necessary safeguards. As I mentioned to you, all member states are invited to these financing dialogues. And then non-state actors who have contributed more than $1 million. Commercial enterprise were not invited for this dialogue so far. So we have put in some safeguards at this point in time.
Thank you. I think I saw Valerie Cliff from UNDP way up there. You have the floor.
Thank you very much. Yes, I'd like to join others in thanking Sweden and WHO for making sure that we were invited to this session. I think it's been very informative. Maybe just to ask on the issue of the project-level financing, and if we move away from that, what is the lowest level of granularity that you are accepting contributions for? For example, can a donor give you a contribution for a certain country and a certain outcome of that country or output? So maybe just to understand a little bit more about if it's not project level, what is the lowest level of earmarking that you would accept? And again, thank you very much. I look forward to continuing the dialogue with WHO and learning more. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, we can go down right to the country level and a specific program at a country level. And all this information is available here. As Fatima showed you on reproductive health, on the program, this particular deliverable which he showed you, there were 73 countries where operations were going on. And so the shortfall can be provided to a number of countries in that particular program if necessary. So we can go down to the level of country level and a specific program if a donor is interested in that. We can go at a higher level also. It could be to an entire region and for a program, or it could be at the headquarters level. So it can go down to very specifically for a program at a country level.
Thank you. I think we have a question from Sweden on my right. So, Eric.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, WHO, for an excellent briefing. I have a question building on the UK question of the on the websites, because I think it could be interesting for the funds and programs present in the room here. Did you build on an existing system for, I know UNDP has the Atlas system, as an existing sort of enterprise management system, and how much was the sort of investment to come up with this very good web portal?
Um, Yeah, we don't have all of the answers to that question, but we did base it on existing portals, and I think we looked at UNDP's website, we looked at the MDTF portals as well, and I think based on that we put it together, but we'll have to come back to you regarding the details.
So the initial investment seems to have been recovered through increased funding, mm-hmm. but I guess the point here was it a hugely expensive investment to set this up, or were you able to handle it within existing resources? Was it a time-consuming and resource-intensive exercise to do this, basically? I think that's a question funds and programs are interested in knowing.
It's quite labor-intensive, but we are also doing this as part of a major WHO reform over the past 3 years. But the member states were informed about all our reform activities, which belong to the program, managerial, and financing aspects. But one of the key targets was that we had to have this portal up and running for the financing dialogue. So it was launched as a prototype in June for the first dialogue, and then updated in November when we had the second dialogue. So we learned from many comments from the member states and so on in order to update this. It was resource intensive. I don't know about the financial implications. We can find that out for you and how much it cost us. But it cost us a lot of our staff time in order to get this up and running. And that investment was worth it, as you said, because we ensured that our target of 70% financing before the beginning of the biennium was achieved. In addition to that, we had an additional 15% of pledges, which puts us in a very comfortable position in order to undertake our activities for this biennium.
Thank you. Any other questions? Yes, I see WFP. Karin.
Yeah, just to thank Sweden and WHO for this presentation. It's very interesting. Very interesting with your web portal and how it pulls together some critical information. I had a couple of questions. First one, and maybe because you showed the portal a little bit quickly, but will you also include information on results there achieved with the funding by program or by project? That was my first question. My second question on if there is a pandemic somewhere, how much, and you need surge capacity, how much flexibility do you have built into your budget, into the system? And my third question was, in the past, I understood that up until now you had assessed contributions, and these were based on a formula. So now, underpinning the structure for assessed contributions. So do I understand now that that formula no longer exists? Do you have another formula, or is it entirely based on the program and the what you just showed here in the web portal? Thank you.
All right, the formula still exists, and that's why you'll find in our pie charts voluntary contributions, SS contributions. The formula has not changed. But the outputs, where these resources will be going through, is clearly marked for which program, which countries, which region, and so on. So it'll be very clear where the voluntary funds are going and where the SS contributions are going. For your second question, how do I phrase it? I'm trying to think what would be the right way to present this. Can you ask the first question, please? I forgot your first question.
Sorry about that. The first question was whether results would also be reflected in your portal. You have, you know, the program, the funding, and then will you also have results now or later on? And my other question was if you would also foresee surge capacity, if there's a huge pandemic somewhere, and how that would be accommodated. Thank you.
No, one of our categories, priorities is surveillance, preparedness, and response. And this one, the Director General has actually kept 20% of the financing in the first tranche of our contributions to herself, so that if there is a need for surge capacity, she can bring on the resources which are required. So this category is financed, but in addition to that, the Director General will have 20% of the current financing available in emergencies for any pandemics. Yes, we will be, as we showed you, we said, what do we want to achieve? And here all the results and deliverables for the biennium are outlined, and we will report according to this. So our reporting will be based on the deliverables and the results which we want to achieve. So our resources will be tracked according to the deliverables which we have said we will achieve for by the end of the biennium.
Okay.
Great. Djibouti.
Thank you very much, Magnus. And I would like to thank, through you, Sweden, for organizing this informal, and also WHO for their briefing and sharing their experience on the dialogue on financing. I heard that in your presentation you said it's something, that this dialogue, it's relatively new, 8 months old. I'm not that familiar with the WHO processes and structure, but I think that this experience is definitely very interesting for our discussions here in New York with fund and programs regarding a more integrated budget and better quality of service and predictability altogether. My question would be actually to understand a little bit more about the background and why the dialogue, this dialogue in for WHO started. What are exactly the challenges that you needed to address by this dialogue? And I the second question I think was somehow mentioned, but about the emergencies and situations where we have breakouts of epidemic or in specific part of a region of or a country, and I just wanted to hear a little bit more on how within this new system the programming and the budgeting take into account such emergencies and how this is planned. Thank you.
Okay. Well, we started with looking at the financing of the organization in 2010, and we had a discussion with the member states about the financing of the organization. And at that time, it was clear that our program had expanded dramatically in the past 10 to 12 years, from a budget of 1.65 billion for a biennium to about 4 billion. So our program had just escalated and mushroomed. So when we talked about predictable financing for the organization, it was clear that we had to agree on program priorities. And this is how the dialogue started. So as part of the reform, we just looked at what this organization needs to do in the landscape of the global health architecture. As you know, there are several other entities which have financing instruments which have come into place now in the last decade, which is the Global Alliance for Vaccination and Immunization, with almost a budget similar to WHO, and the Global Fund for AIDS, TB, and Malaria, the budget larger than WHO, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and so on. So the relevance of WHO and its program had to be identified, and this was the first step in the process. And once that was done, we agreed on 5 major categories of priorities for us. Then the financing was designed on these program priorities, and that's how the whole thing came about. With regard to the epidemics, yes, as I mentioned to you, our Director General has now, among the SS contributions, distributed 80% of the funds for headquarters, for the regions and the countries, but 20% is kept for emergencies. And this is important because we don't, as we know, even as we speak, there are new viruses which are coming up, H10, N7 from China now, H9, N7, and the MERS epidemic in Middle East. So we need to keep some monies available in order to deal with these kind of emergencies. So the Director General has taken this into account. And in addition to our category on surveillance and response, she also has got funding if need be for the future.
Okay. Anybody else who would like to take the floor at this point? Or have we exhausted the questions for now? It seems to be the case. I would like to thank Dr. Komaresa and Fatima for presentations that you've given us today. I think it was a very good exchange of views that we had on this very interesting initiative. It's been a helpful learning experience. And I think we're not alone in seeing that there are great opportunities for the New York-based funds and programs, as well as WFP, not to forget, in terms of picking up elements from this very successful, so far very successful WHO financing a dialogue and to use it as a source of inspiration. Obviously, it's extremely timely because we now have a mandate from the General Assembly to do something very similar. So we are looking for ideas. We're looking for ways to actually build something new. Which has not really existed before. The good news is that we now have the tools in the strategic plans, the integrated results frameworks, and the integrated budgets to build on, and that is going to make it much easier for us to structure these dialogues in a structured way, if you see what I mean. I think there are a number of issues, obviously, that have been touched upon in one way or another. The question of adequate funding, obviously, the whole point with these financing dialogues is to create a better funding base for the organizations, and then of course the quality that goes with that. We do have this issue as a clear mandate from the General Assembly to also discuss the question of critical mass, which is clearly related to what we've been talking about here today, and can be seen as complementary, although they are dealt with in separate ways in the QCPR. Obviously, the quality of funding, how we can work towards making non-core more predictable and less restrictive and more aligned with the strategic plans and country programs is a key issue that we can also address in a better way through these types of transparent interactions. And I think transparency for all member states so far has proven to be a very positive experience. At least the feedback that we are getting from our Geneva mission is that there has been a broad-based support for this initiative from all quarters of the governing body, and that I think is very encouraging. So we encourage all interested delegations here also to liaise with your Geneva missions to find out more about what went into the WHO work. In going forward, I think we'd like to pick up on the proposal made by the UNDP during the QCPR informal last week, namely that the organizations, the funds and programs, develop a roadmap that includes various funding-related mandates for the QCPR. This is also including critical mass, structured dialogues, how do we make that work in a holistic way going forward. We would also encourage the secretariats of the funds and programs to start thinking about, you know, what kind of information, background, documents, etc., will be needed to establish successful dialogues. This will obviously need to be done in consultation with the respective executive boards. And I think today's discussion was very useful in that context. More procedurally, Sweden requested last week that structured funding dialogues be included on the agenda of the UNDP, UNFPA, UNOPS Executive Board at the second regular session. We did not hear any objections. There was support for that proposal. This week, UNICEF is meeting, so we will be making a similar proposal to the UNICEF Executive Board in going forward. So with that, once again, many thanks for doing this excellent presentation. It's been very useful. I hope that we can also use or draw on WHO in other contexts. We have the operational activities segment coming up of the ECOSOC. At the end of the month, Director General of WHO will be here. There will also be other opportunities when some of the boards will be meeting in Geneva later on this year to take this discussion forward. So with that, I'd like to thank you for coming here today, and we're looking forward to keeping this discussion very much alive going forward. Thank you very much.